Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Greta Johnson, and this is the Nerdette Book Club. It's just like a regular book club, except sometimes the author stops by, and that is what's happening today. Somehow it is July, and that means our book club pick for this month is David Yoon's sci-fi-ish, thriller-ish novel, Version Zero. It is about Max. He is a dude who works at Ren, which is, I'll just say, it's a social media company that everybody uses, but everybody kind of hates. So, you know, fill in the blank however you need to in real life. When his bosses ask him to help design a way to collect even more data from Ren users, he has concerns. He gets fired. So he and his buddies cook up a way to get back at the industry. There's a love triangle and a reclusive billionaire and a lot of scheming. That's all I want to say for now. Stay tuned for the super spoilery discussion group on the book later this month. Today, it is a spoiler-free interview with David Yoon, who's here now. David, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, yay. So, as I mentioned a little bit, like, this book is about a lot of things. It's action-packed. It's big and bold. I feel like it's also full of some really interesting ruminations about what the internet is and what the role of tech should have in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to get to some of that philosophy stuff because I think it's really interesting. But first, I'm curious to hear about when you first started thinking about this book as it is. I know you worked in tech for like 20 years, right?
It was closer to like 13 or 14.
Oh, okay.
But still, you know, a long time. I mean, I started from the beginning of the internet. I worked as a web designer, and then we were called interface designers. And then after a while, we were called user experience designers because we had to consider like the whole, like, how do you bring customers on board? How do you keep them? How do you let them do what they want to do easily? But also, how do you get them to do what the business wants them to do? So there's a little bit of mind games going on. Yeah. And, you know, I was mostly inspired when I worked for all kinds of companies. I worked for like social media and cybersecurity, but I also worked for an ad tech company. And that was one of the most interesting jobs because it wasn't making the advertisements. It was making the technology that served up the advertisements. So this was the company where we build profiles off of users based on their behavior. And the funny thing is everyone I worked with had ad blockers installed on all their devices. I mean, to a person, and these are all very smart nerds, you know, and we hated the product that we were making. It was we were totally, I like to say, the non-smokers working at Philip Morris. So like, so I was like, this is interesting, isn't it? This paradox. I wonder if there's a story here.
That's an intense analogy to use, sir. So that's interesting because, like, I mean, in that instance, I don't know. I could see a world where someone is serving up ads that do benefit people. You know what I mean? Like, I think there maybe is a possibility of some good coming out of that, but it seemed like unequivocally too complicated to everybody who worked there.
Oh, I mean, there are, we would complain that like Instagram ads in particular were just really good. We'd be like, oh, they know us so well. And there's a scene in Version Zero where they take some, you know, anonymized data and they de-anonymize it. And it's surprisingly easy to do that. That's actually pulled from an actual conversation I had at my job where we would look at a user profile and look at all their data. And we could pretty much pinpoint, you know, what neighborhood they lived in, at least, without even trying very hard.
Wow.
So that was the part that that's the flip side of the coin. So you got these great ads on for jeans or whatever on Instagram. And on the other side, you have all this tracking data that gets sliced and diced and cut up and repackaged to different vendors. And that's the part that we made everyone install ad blockers on their devices.
It's interesting because, I mean, obviously Version Zero is fiction, but I don't know. I mean, it's also even based on the conversation we've had so far, so based in reality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started this book, man, it was like four or five years ago. And this is before the rise of TikTok. And it kept changing so quickly, and it would get crazier and crazier, sort of beyond what I would imagine. And so I kept having to sort of keep up with how things were changing. But at the core, there was a fundamental issue with technology that stayed the same, you know, and that was issues of trust and issues of like, what happens when you get millions of people hiding their identity online and behaving badly? Mm-hmm. So it made me wonder, like, what the heck is civilization? Like, how do you define civilization? You know, can you have civilized society when you don't know who's talking and you can't even get a response from them? And that's sort of what the internet can be at its worst, is just everyone shouting in the dark.
Yeah, that reminds me, there are a couple really interesting concepts that come up as your characters are just sort of like sitting around daydreaming with each other. And they're, you know, I would say pretty idealistic, super smart young people who had jobs in tech. One of them, there's a conversation that goes, Akiko, who's Max's childhood friend, she says, I just remember that the internet was supposed to be this awesome place that would bring the world together.
Yeah.
And Max responds, it did, but not always in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that reflects your own personal beliefs? I mean, I don't know. Like, you did a Reddit AMA after publishing version zero. Like, what's your own relationship with the internet like at this point?
I mean, it's kind of the relationship that I have with, and I think all of us have, with anything in modern capitalism. You know, I remember like we used to want to boycott certain companies because they behave badly. And you can do that up to a point until you realize that all companies are compromised morally. Mm-hmm. And it gets even more complicated when you use an app, for instance, and that app could contain any number of code libraries by companies that you've never heard of or aren't even aware of. And so what do you do in that case? What do you do like when the car that you drive has a spark plug made by a company in Hungary that, you know, violates human rights? So it is the default state of our capitalist society, is to live with moral paradox and moral conundrums. And the internet kind of is a really obvious way to visualize that. You can really see that the internet can be very cool. Like, I did the Reddit AMA and it was awesome. I loved it. But Reddit is also notorious for posting, you know, pretty awful stuff and enabling some pretty awful stuff. And you can't, there is no what you should do in that situation, that you can only accept that is the situation. What you do with that, I have no idea.
Well, it reminds me too of that idea of like, there are no right choice. There are no good choices to make in these instances too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm still trying to piece that together too. Like, what does civilization mean when you have this sort of anti-civilization trends happening? And what does society mean, and what does trust mean when you have these fundamentally untrustworthy systems that we inhabit? It's such a huge issue that I can barely find the words to even sort of talk about it, you know, let alone figure out how to live in it. You know, a lot of people come up to me because of this book and they're like, do you have any advice on how to stay safe on the internet? And I'm like, first of all, I am so not a tech safety expert. And second of all, no, I have no advice.
All right, I'll delete that question. You mentioned that as you were, you know, over the course of the years that you were writing this book, things, the internet, like the landscape changed in ways that you couldn't have even imagined. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, this book really points out what can be so farcical about all of it, too. I wonder, like, did you think of version zero as satire at all? Because it definitely has some of those elements, I think.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you can't take the internet seriously. you just can't. I mean, you've got, it's sort of this bizarre Frankenstein monster where it was born from like 60s hippie idealism. You know, both Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were part of that culture, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. White dudes with long hair.
Yeah, and they really believed, like Max in the book, you know, our hero, believed that technology was a chance to remake reality in a good way. It was like utopian thinking.
Yeah.
But then you combine that with the capitalist society, especially venture capital society, which demands massive scale and endless growth, which is kind of a weird way of thinking, because nothing in nature is infinite and nothing in nature grows forever. And then you wind up with this fundamental paradox of how do we squeeze more blood from the stone, but also make the world a better place? And they never square up. They never square up. That's why at a certain point, all you can kind of do is laugh, because Facebook still, I forget what their slogan is, but for a long time, it was like, what was it? It's like a place to connect with friends and family. Mm-hmm. And TikTok is a place to hang out and have fun. And Instagram is a place to, you know, but it's not. They're like very, very sophisticated. The world's most sophisticated data collection and advertising systems ever created by humans.
Yeah.
And so the fact that there's such a discrepancy between the sloganeering and the engineering, it's just, at a certain point, it's just really, really funny. And so, yeah, you have to just satirize it.
Can you give an example of, I think one of the funny, I mean, there were a lot of funny aspects of this book, but I think one of the funniest were the names of some of the big tech CEOs that you came up with. Can you tell us some of them?
Yeah, there was Jonah's friend. And
who I was listening to the audiobook for a long time. I thought it was like a friend of some guy named Jonah. I had to rewind. I was like, oh, okay, got it.
I mean, I love stupid names, and then like I love satirical names, because I grew up on like Dr. Seuss and Kurt Vonnegut, and you know, and there's also River Askew. But my favorite has to be Linda Belinda, who is like the CEO of this Reddit-like company, and you know, Reddit can be a total echo chamber that just amplifies itself out of control. And so Linda Belinda, I thought, was a perfect name for someone who runs a company like that.
I think a lot of my favorite parts were actually the conversations between Max and Akiko. And another one that happens is when Akiko mentions the idea of two-way links. Can you explain that a little bit? Because I thought it was really interesting and I had never really thought of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was back in the day, you know, we had, what was it, like BBSs? You dial in and it depended on which one you went to. The most famous one was The Well. And the best ones were the ones where you knew who you're talking to over and over again. And it was a community. It replicated a small community. But with scale comes anonymity in any system. If you are in a small town and you're driving, you pretty much know who you're dealing with on the roads. But if you're in Los Angeles like me, then the cars on the roads become this massive anonymous system. And so one-way links are another form of anonymity. Like I can just kind of throw something out and then run away and you'll never see me again. Whereas two-way links means there's some accountability. So if I link to something, if I make a comment on something and it links back to me, the commenter, then there's some sort of accountability and traceability. And that's closer to a small community model. If I run into a room and everyone knows who I am, I'm going to be cognizant of that and make sure that I behave well. Whereas if I live in a big city and I run into a room with a helmet on so no one can see my face and start screaming obscenities and then run away, then everyone just is left being upset and feeling kind of awful. And that's what Akiko's really getting at, is when you take a huge group of people and give them anonymity and then massive power.
That's a really useful analogy. That makes a lot of sense. Why don't we do that? Because it's inconvenient?
It was just sort of built like, if you read these accounts of the early ARPANET, it was really built without security in mind, because they all knew each other. And
they didn't have to worry about who was on the road, essentially.
Yeah, totally. There was an honor system and they all followed it. And then they were like, okay, let's scale this up to billions of users and see what happens.
Have you imagined what your life would be like without the internet?
Oh, I don't have to. I remember what it was like. It was great.
I don't know. Awesome. I just feel like it's changed so much. Like I was in high school when the internet started, or maybe junior high when the internet was I was a Napster kid, which was awesome. But I don't know, it's hard to picture things functioning the way we're just so used to it. You know, I feel like I'm just so complicit. I can't imagine extricating that system from my life and being able to function.
Yeah. I mean, here's a funny story. Like I was, you know, during the last year, like I was experiencing high levels of stress and high levels of obsessive compulsive behavior. Like I was scrolling the feeds from the first thing in the morning all day until the second I went to sleep. And, you know, because you had all kinds of horrible things going on and your fight or flight response is just on high alert. Yeah. And it was affecting everything, my sleep, my appetite, everything. And then my therapist and my wife were like, you need to stop. And so
David,
I did.
Please don't do this.
So, I mean, but I not only did I stop scrolling the bad stuff like news, but also anything good, because I realized I'd been cluttering my brain like some hoarder, you know. So good stuff, bad stuff, any of it, I just kind of stopped for weeks. And then when I meditated, I realized I flashed really hard back to when I was in high school. And I felt like I was sitting in my room again, just surrounded by magazines and books and tapes and my friends. And I realized that that was sort of the last time I really had true headspace until the internet started to creep into it. And I remember that time. It was great. You made plans and you just showed up.
More with David Yoon about Version Zero and the internet in general in just a minute.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm curious to ask you a little bit about genre, because this is your first adult novel and you've also written two YA books. I think there's some obvious differences between the two. I mean, you know, I imagine in a book like this, you can, like, gore is one example, cursing, you know, like there are things for adult audiences that are just like, I feel like you can get away with a little easier than maybe you could with YA. Not to say that YA isn't super sophisticated on its own. But I was curious if there was something that surprised you about writing an adult book that you weren't expecting, but that you found you could do maybe more easily or just differently than you could with YA.
Well, my wife Nicola is also a YA author, and you know, she wrote Everything Everything, and The Sun is also a star, and her latest is Instructions for Dancing. But like we talk about stories constantly. It's actually a problem in the house. Well, yeah, this subject of like the difference between YA and adult comes up a lot. And what we've been able to figure out is that YA always, no matter, because YA can be really bloody and really dark.
It can. I mean, especially if you think about something like The Hunger Games. I mean, those are brutal books.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Little kids die. I mean, it's messed up. But but they always end on a note of hope. There's always an underlying hope for the story. And so no matter how dark things get, and adult books aren't always necessarily writing from a place of hope. In adult, it's perfectly okay to write in a total state of despair and just leave it there. Leave it unresolved. And I thought for the internet, especially, the jury's very much out. I mean, the internet is very much unresolved on whether it's hopeful or full of despair. So I figured this should be an adult book.
That makes a lot of sense. There's a question that comes up a couple times in the book that I thought was really interesting. It's about what enough is. And it's talked about kind of in a financial sense, but I think also an existential one. And it got me wondering, like, what's enough for you these days?
This is a question I grapple with all the time. You know, what is enough? Because when I was in college, I remember all my stuff, all my worldly possessions could fit in two suitcases. And I thought that was cool. Now I think like that it means that something's wrong. But I mean, I have so many, mostly books. And it's really a question that I would love people to come away thinking about, like after reading version zero. I mean, the first question I want people to think about when they finish the book is, has the internet been worth it? Is it, we know all the trade-offs we make. We joke about it too. We're like, oh, Alexa is listening to me. Ha ha ha. I mentioned perfume and Instagram served me an ad for perfume. So my phone is listening. Ha ha. And,
LOL.
we're sort of like shrug about it. So I want people to just ask themselves, has it been worth it? And the other thing is really this question of enough, not just in terms of how much money do you need or how much stuff in the house do you need, but also how much information do you need on a daily basis? When I talk about mental hoarding, what I see people and myself included doing every day is from the moment we wake up, we begin, our brains are empty because we just slept and the dreams take care of our mental capacity. And we wake up and we start stuffing the room again with stuff. Here's a funny cat video. Here's a funny video. Here's a news article. When should you stop? Like, what's a healthy amount of things to own mentally? And that's another thing that I would love people to come away just kind of being aware of. Your mind is a palace. It's a sacred space, and it is you. So how do you take care of it best?
Oh, I think that's really important. And I love that you're kind of setting up those two questions for people as they start to read this book, because I think they're both really important. And yeah, I'm not sure that the book necessarily answers either of those, but just to continue inviting the questions, I think is super important.
Oh yeah, I love asking questions like that. I was on a plane, we landed. As soon as we got signal again, these two obviously, important Instagram influencers in front of me began scrolling and liking and checking and refreshing and scrolling, and they moved so fast. It was kind of virtuosic in its own perverse way. But I was like, this is, you're drinking from fire hose here. You this it's at a scale that humans can't handle, and yet we're running as fast as we can to try to keep up. So I'm wondering, where is the limit, from human to inhuman?
Well, you've invited me to reassess my own shit for sure.
So how are your internet habits? Tell me about yours.
I feel like I have pretty good boundaries, but I do spend a lot of time, especially, I've been working from home for a while now, just sort of like going back, like let's see, Twitter, like Instagram, like just kind of back and forth. Did I get any text? Do I have any emails? What's on Twitter? What's on Instagram? Did I get any text? Did I, And it's mindless. It's like, I'm not even thinking about pushing the buttons. It's just like, what's going on here? What's going on here? Okay, great. Good.
Yeah, totally. It's like that scene from Portlandia where Fred Armisen is caught in the laptop phone tablet spiral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, right. It's like, yeah. What, do I need this many screens? Like, no, for sure, no. But here we are.
I know, here we are.
On that note, David Yoon, thank you so much for talking with me. This was a fascinating conversation.
Thanks, and I'm sorry I don't have all the answers to the internet. I'll try harder in the next book.
David Yoon is the author of Version Zero. It is our Nerd at Book Club pick for this month. Read it and then tell us what you thought about it. Did it make you reevaluate your relationship with the internet? What was your favorite part? Would you read a sequel? Let us know by recording yourself on your phone and then email the file to nerdatpodcast@gmail.com. Do it before Friday, July 23rd, and then tune in on Tuesday, the 27th for our super spoilery discussion. In a very meta move, now I'm going to tell you can keep in touch with us on the internet. I post mini book reviews at Nerdette Podcast on Instagram, and our Nerdette Headquarters group on Facebook is full of book nerds. You can join up there at facebook.com/groups/NerdetteHQ. The show is produced by me and Isabel Carter. Our executive producer is Brandon Banizak. We will see you on Friday.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.